Hi, this is Mike Son from ProPlay AI, and you're listening to The Walk-Off with Scott Belfort and Adam Mack.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's The Walk-Off with Scott Belfort and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
Wire and another one. My goodness.
I'm alive, buddy.
You made it. I was worried about you yesterday.
Oh, man. So, first off, everybody, welcome to The Walk-Off. I'm Scott Belford, joined by Adam Mack.
Cheers.
And, buddy, we've had some vaccine side effects, the two of us. It's so funny because you were out of it for like 3 days, and now I'm feeling like I just did not empathize enough with you
at all. Screw you.
Oh, even thinking back to when Lourdes got taken out of the game there back in April with side effects, and I was like, how bad could they be, right? Man, I have not been that sick as I was yesterday in 5 years since I had food poisoning. Like, it was one of those things where, you know, when you get so sick, you actually have crazy thoughts like, if this is life, just take me, you know, like, just end it.
Yeah.
And what's even crazier is because it's not a real flu. Like, I just feel 100% fine now.
Yeah.
Like, my serotonin is through the roof right now, buddy. I've never been. It's like a reverse mushroom trip, you know, like where you're just like groggy and out of it the next day. Like, yeah. I feel amazing.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
So we do want to quickly apologize to everybody who is trying to keep up with us on the live stream. The last couple of weeks has been a bit of a mishmash.
Yeah.
But we do promise that we're back to every single Tuesday here, hopefully with more regularity the last couple of weeks. I know we had some trouble on YouTube and had to bump it to Thursday last week. And then this week we had to bump it just because Adam had some family in town and we thought Thursday would be perfect. And then I was so sick and Adam spilled soda water on his computer and it spent the night in rice. So
yeah. So the Jays aren't the only ones struggling right now. It's been a tough June for everybody.
It's been a tough June for all of us here. Another quick thing we did want to mention here on The Walk-Off, we have a brand new member of The Walk-Off team. Lewis Foster is going to be joining us, not on all the casts and stuff like that. He'll probably do a couple live streams with us when one of us is away, but he's going to be cutting up clips and stuff like that for all of our interviews, which is fantastic because we have so much great content and so many amazing baseball minds who have joined us. And we are well aware that not everyone has 45 minutes to 60 minutes every single time we put something out to watch it. So he's going to clip it all up and make it much more palatable for short bursts, which is fantastic. Yeah. Lewis is an Australian kid. He has moved to Toronto. So we've actually got about a 10-minute little interview we're doing with him as an introduction that you can catch that on our YouTube page. He kind of talks about, he's a pitcher himself, 15 years old. He's throwing 86 miles an hour is where he's hitting right now. So who knows? The kid has potential. He talks about transitioning from developing in Australia to just how much more coaching and development possibilities there are in Canada, which was very interesting. And then we talk a little bit about the sticky substances stuff. So that's on our YouTube page right now. You can check that out. And welcome to The Walk-Off, Lewis. All right, buddy. Our guest for today... And we've been sitting on this one for a little while, haven't we?
We have, yeah.
So Mike Somm of ProPlay AI, which is basically a piece of engineering that has been developed to pinpoint how to properly throw a ball. Basically, just the most efficient way that a pitcher can pitch. And we get into the depths of that with him. Nate Pearson is one of the founding members of this new piece of baseball technology. So we get the ins and outs of that from Mr. Somm. It's a really interesting interview. We talked to him back in January and just are getting a chance to release it now. We do appreciate him sitting down with us. So as always, all of our guests are brought to you by yourrate.ca. Darren Brown, the mortgage broker, sure to help you get into that mortgage you're after, whether it's just renewing your current one or getting you a brand new one. You can do that paperless online and get it all started right now at yourrate.ca. All right, my man. Let's do it. The Blue Jays.
Okay, can I just stop you right there?
Please.
Before we get into the Blue Jays, something happened a few weeks ago now to Toronto sports fans. Their hockey team was eliminated from the playoffs in devastating fashion to my Montreal Canadiens. And I just want everybody to, like, sleep easy knowing that it wasn't in vain because we've made the cup finals.
Pretty impressive, man.
This is a big deal.
I should have texted you last night.
You should have.
Just bad friendship.
Just the worst. I mean, you were trying to survive, so.
I was trying to survive.
You get a pass. That's true. But, no, we're in the finals, and, you know, the work isn't done yet, but.
Hey, it is pretty darn cool. It is pretty darn cool. It has been since 2007, I think it was, with the Senators, that a Canadian team has been in the Cup Final.
I think 2011, the Canucks went.
Oh, 2010. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was 2010. Yeah, I remember vehemently cheering against the Canucks.
The Canucks are not a likable team, that's for sure.
I'm a Flames fan, so I can't help it. Yeah, I know. It's very similar to Leafs fans with the Habs, right? Yeah. Like, it's sacrilegious to even dream of cheering for the Canucks. Absolutely. But I'm with you, man. I think it would be so cool. I mean, it's been a long time since Canada has even had a shot at this. So
here's where this kind of ties back into baseball. Montreal did not exactly storm the barn on their way into the playoffs.
No.
But all you need is a ticket to the dance, and then anything
can
happen.
That's right, buddy.
Right?
That's right, man.
So with the Jays sitting, what are we now? Four games above 500? Three games above 500?
I think it's three games above 500. Five-game winning streak.
I kind of just... This Montreal Canadiens run to the Cup Finals has just kind of rejuvenated my enthusiasm for this Jays team to be buyers at the deadline. Like, let's just squeak in and then who knows, right?
Hey, man, this team has been stated to have the easiest schedule remaining in baseball in the American League. Just according to teams above 500 and the teams that they're playing. You know, like, they've put in a lot of work already against the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Rays. It's no small feat to be where they are right now. And you know what? Everyone was worried about the Rays, and they went on that six-game losing streak. No team is invincible in a 162-game season. And shocking, here we are, end of June, with a team that everyone knew had some deficiencies on it. And we're pretty much... I mean, where I thought we would be, you know, maybe a little. They definitely have blown some games.
Mm-hmm.
And I know everyone's still so upset about that. But when you play with fire, sometimes you get burned, right? Like, this is a team that has always kind of just grabbed guys off the scrap heap for the bullpen, and Pete Walker has turned them into viable pitchers. And May was rough.
You know, when you get down to playoffs, you need like your rotation gets shortened, right? You need three or four like good arms. We got Ryu if he can stay healthy. Ray's looking like an all-star.
Yeah.
Right? And then you piece together like a, who knows, some magic between Stripling and Manoa, as weird as that is to say, or
Mats,
you know, Mats
back
comes
now.
Back and is
he's
healthy, right?
IL.
And you add one piece at the trade deadline, and all of a sudden you go, hey, this is a pretty good starting rotation that matches up competently, you know, and then, you know, then you do need the offense to stay hot, and, you know, historically...
They've got the offense, though. Yes, I mean, look at what they did yesterday without George Springer in the lineup.
And I'm sure.
I mean, I know it's the Orioles. This is the thing. They are on a five-game winning streak. And I think all Jays fans are kind of in the same boat that, yeah, that's great. That's awesome. It's exciting. We do know who we're playing, right?
Yeah. But look, this is what it comes down to, is you got to go 500 against the good teams. Mm-hmm. And then you got to beat up on these bad teams.
The
and that's
guys.
What I've been hammering all season long. Like, it's good we're splitting with the Yankees, but it only matters if we beat up on these bad teams. And I didn't think we would do it. So,
well, let's even talk this bullpen a little, because I know that the panic was at an all-time high. I was on board with the panic train, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you watch what happened in May, and it's hard not to panic. But you know what? They have, under the radar, improved substantially. Tim Mesa has allowed one run in June. One run in June. He has allowed one run every other month, not named May. Yeah. Like, he is being trusted more by Charlie. He is starting to get some high leverage situations. The dude is a stud. Like, the guy really is putting it together.
Yeah.
And if Ryan Barucki comes back and they've got a 1-2 lefty tandem of Mesa and Barucki, who both do well against lefties and righties, you know, yeah, like, they're not pitchers that are lefty specialists by any means.
Mm-hmm.
And then Taylor Sesedo has come up. He was, of course, called up when Barucki went down. Clean inning last night. Big 6'5" kid that they got from the Bisons. He hasn't pitched much. They're easing him in, but a big arm. Throws 96, 97. Has a strikeout slider. You know, he's pitched two clean innings in his major league debuts. He has two strikeouts already. I know, a very small sample size, but it's good to see a kid like that step up in these situations. And it's kind of cool, too. I'm bringing up Sesedo partly, too, because we chat with him on Monday morning. So we'll be airing that on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you know, this bullpen is slowly starting to pull it together. Jacob Barnes, that they got out of New York from the Mets for some cash. He had a clean outing in his Blue Jay debut last night. Again, they are playing the Orioles, but it's good to see a little bit of competency, I guess is the word. Even Tyler Chatwood, man. Like, the last 2 weeks, he's kind of put it together. Listen, he instills zero confidence, but he's been all right the last 10 days. I know the face you're making. You're like, don't bring Tyler Chatwood into this. But
we're having so much fun, Scott. Why do you got to bring up our exes?
Yeah.
No, and you know, there's more hope, like, on the horizon. Like, if Julian Merriweather can be good once he's back and healthy, like,
again, Barucki's almost back, which is a huge piece to this bullpen.
You know, part of it is just weathering the storm and not imploding and getting a ticket to the dance, you know, and then doing the most with it when you get there. And
agreed.
I don't know.
Into that wild card spot.
After that first game against the Orioles there, I was feeling pretty down in the dumps.
Especially after we had that whole chat about, is this rock bottom? Have we hit as low as we can after being swept by the Yankees? And then, of course, the first game after, the Orioles beat them.
Yeah.
And it was a game that they should have won, obviously.
But, you know, we haven't exactly... I mean, we've had some big wins in this winning streak. Mm-hmm. We've also had some ninth inning come from behind character wins, and
that six runs they put up against the Orioles when they were down by three to start this winning streak off and end the losing streak they were on was huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there has been some storylines along this way. Listen, Alek Manoah and Charlie Montoyo got suspended. And what's funny, too, is, and I think all Jays fans have seen it, and if you hadn't, what happened is Manoah got hit for back-to-back solo home runs off the Orioles, and then he hammered the next guy in the back with a fastball. And I'll be honest, man, at first, I didn't think it was intentional.
Okay.
I didn't. I honestly thought, you know, he's a young kid, 23-year-old, frustrated, struggling to find the zone. But the more that this unrolled, mm-hmm. the more I'm like, you know what? I think he did try and hit him. The way the Orioles responded and reacted, man, like, guys know, mm-hmm. right? Like, guys know when someone's throwing at him. And Manoah was frustrated. He's a fiery kid. And there were a few things that happened that made me think, okay, maybe this was intentional. How upset the Orioles manager was. how upset the guy who got hit was. The fact that when they handed out the suspension, Charlie just took it and was like, yeah, no problem. And yeah, Alek Manoah appealed, but basically he appealed because the suspension was just a fake suspension anyways. He's suspended for five days. Mm-hmm. So they're just waiting for an off day so that they can
not miss a start.
Yeah. So then you're not even suspended, right? I know. So it's like this slap on the wrist, but basically I think he tried to hit him, man. Like,
well, that's the thing. Like, Alek Manoah is, he's got that old school swagger to him.
Yeah.
We saw it in spring training. Like, he pitched big against the Yankees. You know, he was throwing at guys in that game.
Yeah.
Like, this is who he is, and I love it.
Me too. It is old school. It is old school. Yeah. And you don't see it very often. But 100%. If he didn't mean to hit him, he meant to get pretty darn close. Like, the way the ball hit him was how you would hit him if you were trying to. Yeah, right?
Right in the
dead
meat.
Center in the back with a fastball.
Yep. No, I don't know. I love it. I love everything about Manoah. He's had some great starts. He's had some bad starts. I love everything about this kid.
That was the start that got the Jays back on track, man.
Yep.
That was the game that started this winning streak. And maybe just getting the team fired up like that was something.
Hey, going back to hockey, sometimes you just need that guy to just drop the gloves.
Yes.
Just start a fight, do something weird, and just get your team energized. And maybe that was it.
And you could tell, man. Like, I don't know. He was fired up that he got thrown out, but I don't think he was mad that he got called for, you know, like, had he just given him a warning? That's what, like, if you read what Manoah was yelling, he's like, no warning, no warning, right? Like,
where's my free shot? Yeah.
No. But you know what, man? I love seeing the fire in the kid, and whether it was intentional or not, I think it did the trick. This Jays team is hitting since they've been playing these lesser teams. I mean, what was interesting to see too, man, is that when they weren't hitting, they shut it down. Like, those games against Miami, they played against two really, really good starting pitchers.
Yeah.
In Alcantara and Trevor, his name's eluding me now, but that's all right. Whatever.
Yeah.
Both very, very solid starting pitchers. They didn't get a lot of runs, but man, they stayed in the game and they won them both. So they're winning in different ways. They hammered the Orioles last night. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. with a grand salami, his first of his career. Blue Jays hitters lead the major leagues in hitting the first pitch. They're hitting the first pitch at a rate of over 400.
Okay, so I want a clarification on this. What does that mean? Does that mean it's like a 400 average when they swing at the first pitch? Or does that mean that? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're going up ready to hit. That's something.
Yeah.
They're going up ready to hit. Okay, let's switch gears here and talk this catching position, which we've done several times throughout this season. But this is a much more positive take on the catching situation than we have come to get used to, become accustomed to.
Yes.
Reese McGuire. Buddy.
That kid can hit, eh?
He is looking incredible, man. People are talking about him for all the right reasons this time. It's good. Let's go over some stats.
All right.
I know he has 13 hits in his last 21 at-bats. The guy's hitting over 300. Do you have his stats up here, man?
Yeah, so he is currently hitting 324 with an OPS of 827.
Wow.
That's through 29 games and 80 plate appearances, so roughly half the games the Jays have played, a little less.
What's interesting, too, is Reese McGuire now has a career line of 267, 307 on base percentage and a slugging of 449 in the bigs. And if you throw out the weird year that was 2020, he's hitting 307, 352 with a 510 slugging.
Wow.
The guy is having great at bats. His approach at the plate has been phenomenal. And you watch, he's not getting out of what he's trying to do, which is turn the lineup over. He's hitting balls the other way. He's taking what they're giving him. If they're only throwing him outside on the corner, he just taps it into right field or left field, mm-hmm. I should say, taps it into left field. This is another thing, man, is the fact the Jays need lefty bats so bad. They are probably going to bring in a lefty bat at the trade deadline for the bench. But if Reese McGuire can get going, that is huge and definitely breaks up a righty-heavy lineup. Do you want to go over Danny Jansen's numbers?
No.
No?
I will, but yeah. I don't want to. So he's, to his credit, has gone a lot better since the start of the year.
Yes.
He's obviously out with an injury right now. But
how many plate appearances does he have?
122.
Okay, so he's a little bit more. He's played more
50% more than Reese has. His batting average is 157 with a slugging percentage of 278.
Ugh.
So he has an OPS of 526. So OPS plus is one of these like new adjusted metrics where they basically set the bar as average for the position is 100. And then you kind of know if they're below 100, how much worse they are, or if they're above 100, how much better they are than average, right?
Right.
So Reese McGuire's OPS plus is 127. Danny Jansen's is 46.
Yeah. So the question starts to get asked here with Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen, both coming off the IL here in early July, mid-July. What happens here? Now, Riley Adams...
Sorry, can I just press pause for a second?
Please.
Just on the topic of OPS plus, Vlad Guerrero Jr., OPS plus, 201.
Wow.
That's absurd.
Wow. So just 200 points above average.
Yeah.
So. Wow.
Anyways, back to the catchers.
So I don't know where the Blue Jays go from here. I'm starting to feel like there's no way that they can send Reese McGuire down at this point, especially with the fact that he's filling so many check marks.
Mm-hmm.
Lefty bat. Not striking out. Turning the lineup over. Can lay down a bunt. Has thrown guys out who are stealing, something the other guys don't tend to do.
Yeah. I was just going to say, defensively, he's probably our best catcher. I don't know if he calls the best game. I think Danny Jansen might still have that on him.
But the pitchers like Reese McGuire.
Yeah.
I wonder if Kirk is the one who winds up at AAA.
Well, he's there right now for rehab, right?
Yes.
I would just say
partly because they needed room on the 40-man roster, so they had to put him on the 60-day IL, which allows them to rehab him and keep him in the minors until they're ready to actually activate him, right?
Kind of just kick their problem down the road.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you have to leave him down there until he's doing something like Gabriel Moreno, where you just can't ignore it. So.
And Riley Adams has struggled. Riley Adams has faced a steady diet of off-speed pitches. They refuse to throw the man a fastball. And this is what happens when guys get called up to the big leagues, is if they prove they can hit a fastball, normally pitchers are like, fine, I'll throw you sliders and changeups all day long, bud.
Yeah.
And they have, and it's worked. I don't even think Riley Adams is hitting 100 right now.
He's hitting 080.
Right, but he only has, what's his plate appearances at, 30?
25 at-bats, 26 plate appearances.
Right, okay, so
yeah,
very, very small sample size, but I think Riley Adams is out of a job as soon as somebody is ready to come back, and but I don't think it's going to be a Jansen-Kirk tandem.
No, I don't think
even
so
if Reese cools down, I don't think Reese is actually a 320 hitter. But even if he continues to chug along at 270 with a 320 on base percentage and a guy who can be relied upon behind the plate defensively to be able to throw guys out as well as lay down a bunt, which is something Danny Jansen has proven time and time and time again he can't do. I don't know. I think Reese has proven he deserves a spot on this team. For a guy who is DFA'd.
Yeah. I mean, if you look further back in his history, like, he was a highly touted prospect at some point.
Yes, he was.
Right? Like, I mean, there's a lot of enthusiasm among the fan base for Alejandro Kirk, and understandably so. But Reese McGuire didn't just show up out of nowhere this year. No. Either, so.
And he's been one of the guys that this front office has been playing asset management with for the last year and a half.
Yeah.
So now that he's actually proving them right, I think he's probably safe right now. Which he did just 2 months ago look like the odd man out. I mean, 29 other teams could have grabbed him, dude. He cleared waivers.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm happy for him.
Me too. Me too. I mean, the guy made some real bonehead mistakes. And
we all have, let's be honest. It's as long as he continues to behave himself and puts his past behaviors in the past and whatever, then I guess, who knows, maybe I'll get canceled for even saying kudos to him. But who knows?
Hey, you know what? Like, what a big thing to overcome. Like, what a bonehead move to need to deal with. And he's dealing with all the constant jokes. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure his teammates aren't ribbing him anymore. But for sure, when he first came into spring training after that, how do you not rib a guy for that? Exactly. You know? So it is good to see Reese has gotten his life and his career back on the right track, which is good to see. All right. Anthony K got a spot start last night and looked really good, man. This is actually really cool. So Anthony K became the first pitcher in Blue Jays history to strike out the first seven batters in a game. That impressive stuff, especially when you start to look over all the guys who have pitched for the Jays, and Roy Halladay and Al Leiter and Dave Steeb, and the list goes on and on of elite pitchers who have never struck out the first seven batters.
Roger Clemens.
He did allow some runners, but no runs. He looked a little sketchy at times, but pulled out of it every time. He got his first win of 2021. If Anthony K can give us the odd spot start that looks like that, he's earned his spot on the team. That's good stuff.
Good for him.
Nate Pearson, injured again, man. And it's the same injury that he had earlier in the year. His groin has been a problem for him, and you hope that he wasn't rushed back. I know that groins are tricky, and sometimes you can re-injure them. At this point, dude, I think there's no way that he doesn't wind up in the bullpen for the Blue Jays.
Like, as a career?
No, not for his career, just for 2021. Okay. I just don't think that there's any way that they can stretch him back out to a starter, which is what they were obviously trying to do because they refused to put him in the bullpen when they really needed him. I think by September, I'm going to predict we see Nate Pearson in this Toronto Blue Jays bullpen. If he's healthy, if he can make his way back. He's on the 7-day IL right now. I know in the minors, they make it the 7-day just to keep guys, not keep him on the IL for as long. If they, you know, they don't need rehab and stuff, they can rehab right there.
Right.
Real bummer, man.
Big time.
This kid just keeps getting injured. All right. Any other Blue Jay stuff to go over here?
No, just you kind of deflated me here with this Nate Pearson topic.
Nate Pearson news, Well, before we move on, we are going to live stream tonight?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So everyone can join us. Adam may be on his own for two-thirds of this. My brother's in town, but I'm going to join for the first hour or so. And
sure, I'll have my dog yapping in the background.
Yeah, it'll be perfect. And of course, all the regulars will be joining us. And if you're new to the podcast, welcome. We live stream every single Tuesday, except for today, which is a Friday. And the live streams are all brought to you by yourrate.ca. Okay, let's move on to the MLB and the sticky stuff.
Where do we start?
What a fun little week it has been, eh?
Man, we've been seeing guys drop their drawers on the field.
Okay, first of all, let's start with that. Before we start with that, let's start with Max Scherzer.
Okay.
So Max Scherzer got asked to hand his glove and his hat over, and they inspect.
Max Scherzer is a first ballot Hall of Famer, right?
First ballot Hall of Famer. And MLB was doing this because they were already, before it even came into effect, being accused of looking for a scapegoat and going to pick on these lesser guys. So right away, of course, the first thing they do is they inspect Yu Darvish. They inspect Jacob DeGrom. They inspect all the top guys. Max Scherzer, no big deal. Pretty calm the first time. Gives his hat, gives his glove, hands it over. An inning and a half later, he gets inspected again. And now he's a little bit pissy about it, right? Still, he kept his calm. Then, and this is something I didn't know about these inspection rules, is that the opposing manager can actually ask for an inspection.
Yeah, that's so ludicrous, by the way.
Which is absolutely insane. Just absolutely insane that the MLB didn't even think that this might be a problem. And of course, second day, and it's a problem.
And there's no limit to it. They can just ask whenever they feel
they can just keep asking. Joe Girardi, being a fairly, now listen, this is a dick move on his part, but he's a savvy old manager.
Very punchable face.
With a very punchable face. If we were to name a manager to Adam's all punch, face punch team, he'd probably be the guy. But Joe Girardi was in the middle of a battle with one of the best pitchers in baseball. They were down 3-1, and he was like, I'm just going to try and upset this guy. And it worked, man. So Joel West goes out to inspect old Max Scherzer's again, and now Joe Girardi was like, I think it's in his hair. I need you to inspect his hair. So now Max is mad. Like, he's just plain mad, right? Mm-hmm. And he starts, now he throws his glove and he throws his hat down, and now he starts taking his belt off, and the ump's like, whoa, 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 whoa. I need to check your hair. So, of course, he's clean. He's fine. And what was weird too, no repercussions for the manager doing this. You don't lose a challenge. You don't do anything.
Yeah.
Anyways, fast forward a little bit later in the night, Sergio Romo just loses his mind for absolutely no reason. First time being inspected. He literally throws his glove on the ground, throws his hat on the ground, takes his belt off, pulls his pants down. He just pulls his pants down.
You can see the umps having a good laugh about it too, eh? Like, not expecting that.
Oh, I think my favorite check so far is when they checked for the Baltimore Orioles. Mickey Janis, who is a really cool story, by the way, 33-year-old knuckleball rookie. But they're inspecting a knuckleballer for sticky stuff that adds spin. Think about how asinine that is.
Yeah, wow.
It's wild. Yeah. Like a knuckleballer spin. If there's spin on a knuckleball, it's no longer a knuckleball, and guys are hitting that out of the park.
It's a soft changeup. Yeah.
One of my favorite things too is after the Girardi and, you know, the dust up between Max and Girardi and the Nationals and Phillies have already a bit of a rivalry. They're just an hour down the road from each other in same division.
And Bryce Harper.
Bryce Harper runs into third base there, slides in, his helmet comes off, and his hair is flowing, right?
Another very punchable face. And then all of a sudden,
yeah, you start hearing the guys in the Nationals dugout. They start yelling at the ump. They're like, check his hair. Check his greasy hair for sticky stuff.
I love it.
It was so funny that even the ump and Bryce Harper were laughing. Like, they were like, okay, that's pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
How do you feel about these checks?
Well,
kind of necessary, I guess.
Like, yeah, I guess, but also it kind of, like, I mean, if we're worried about pace of play, right?
And I mean, this is why they did it at the end of the inning, is they are trying to keep pace of play going. But then when you have guys flipping out, like, is this just going to, this is just going to calm down, eh? In a few months, it's just going to be commonplace and
I don't know. Like, do you need to check a guy after he just gave up 3 home runs in an inning? Like, if he was using sticky stuff, who the fudge cares at that point?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, even the hitters have to be thinking that.
Like, honestly, I don't know. The whole thing is asinine. I mean, Trevor Bauer is slated to make his first start tonight. Yeah. Since the checking has been implemented, and I can't wait to see what happens.
I can't wait too.
Oh my gosh, we're going to be keeping an eye on that. So,
what I love too, man, is all the Trevor Bauer haters that are just out there like, oh man, Bauer's done now. Yeah. Like, he's going to be terrible. And it's like, do you even pay attention? The man has been screaming about this for 5 years now. Like, he has literally been the biggest thorn in the MLB's side about this. He single-handedly made them address this issue.
And managed to still get paid before they did anything about it.
Yeah.
So, literally laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, like, hate them all you want, but this, like, this sticky stuff situation is not screwing Bauer over, and it's not Bauer's fault. Like, if anything, he is the one who made them address this.
You know what? Just to get totally off topic here, do you like superhero movies at all, or comic books, or anything like that?
Yeah, I don't mind them.
Okay. So, for me, basically all superheroes come down to the quality of the villain. Right? It's why Batman's so good. I love the Joker and all those guys, right? Two-Face. Everybody's got a story. And so much of it comes down to, like, if the villain has a believable, like, motive for why he's such a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And I just feel like Trevor Bauer is an amazing villain for the MLB because this is a guy who didn't want to be a villain.
No.
He wanted to be like, hey, we got a problem. We got to address this. And it was ignored and ignored and ignored. And then finally, he's flipping his Two-Face coin and off he goes. And he's like, all right, well, if you can't beat
him, join him. I'm hiring scientists.
Then. Yeah. Like, he's literally a villain out of a comic book. And I love it. I just love it. So.
Yeah, me too. He reminds me of a heel in wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, he's the perfect bad guy.
It's perfect.
And you're right. Like, you start going over his origin story and you're like, okay, like, I see why he's a bad dude. Like,
exactly. So anyways, fun to see what happens with him tonight. I know he was mentioning there, on Sunday about, like, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to just ask for hand checks because I don't want to get caught with anything? Like, so
this is what I think is hilarious, is that he totally might do something like that where he's asking for checks on himself.
For sure. I would expect nothing less than him to do that tonight.
As MLB is trying not to slow the game down, he'll be like mid-batter. Yeah. Be like, I don't know. Like, it feels sticky.
Absolutely. I can't wait. But you know what? We've been complaining for the last 4 days about this pace of play and how ridiculous these checks have been. It's going to take someone that doesn't care about looking like an asshole to really point out, like, the flaws and the loopholes that are being manipulated and whatever, and just, like, really draw it out and make an absurd scene of it.
And if there's anyone who doesn't care about looking like an a-hole, it is Sir Trevor Bauer.
Well, I mean, Just picture, like, the ESPN analysts Saturday morning going, Trevor Bauer was checked for sticky substances 14 times yesterday. Or, you know, like, something, right? Like, 72 minutes of stoppages for Trevor Bauer because of whatever. Yeah. Like, just something ridiculous, right? But
no, for sure. I look forward to seeing how it plays out. All right, well, let's wrap it up there. The Blue Jays playing and continuing their 4-game series against the Orioles tonight. Hopefully they can continue this 5-game winning streak. They're on a hot streak. Looks good. All right, thanks so much for listening, everybody. You can follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, on Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast. Of course, we're giving away a Blue Jays jersey with the player of your choice on the back. All you need to do is go to our Instagram page, like the post, tag a fellow Blue Jays friend or fan in the comments, and subscribe on YouTube, and a Blue Jays jersey could be yours. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Take care. We'll see you on Tuesday.
Runner goes, trying to steal third, and that one is belted to left center field, and that baby's gone.
Hi, this is Mike Son from ProPlay AI, and you're listening to The Walk-Off with Scott Belfort and Adam Mack.
All right, so pleased to be joined by one of the founders and chief scientists for ProPlay AI, an organization at the technological front of sports science and biomechanics, Dr. Mike Son. Welcome to The Walk-Off, man. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, I will tell you that my science knowledge definitely lacking in comparison to my baseball knowledge, so you might have to bear with us a little bit here. How's your 2021 treating you so far?
Well, you know what? It can't be any worse than 2020, so pretty decent start so far.
Where are you at right now?
I'm in Hamilton, Ontario.
Okay, awesome. Right on. Before we get into ProPlay AI, let's decipher a little bit of language here, and let's start with biomechanics. Explain for our listener, and I'm not going to put that all on them, also for myself, what biomechanics are, and when we talk about the capture of biomechanical data, what is that referring to?
Yeah, so biomechanics is one of the aspects of the study of human motion, and it's specific to the positions and the forces that act on the joints of your body. So there's a lot of different ways that we look at biomechanics. A big field is like understanding how people walk when they get hurt, and how their gait changes after they've been injured or as they're rehabilitating.
Kind of compensating type of thing.
Exactly. And then in the baseball world, the biggest focus on biomechanics is understanding kind of, you know, when you see those funny photos of pitchers with their arms all distended and their faces all warped, it's understanding how they get into those different postures and which ones lead to pitchers that can throw harder, which ones lead that to pitchers that might have more health.
So what is your professional background, Mike? Give us a quick rundown of your resume.
Yeah, so I did my PhD in biomechanics at McMaster University here in Hamilton. Started in 2010 it was. So I've been in Hamilton for 10 years now. But my training.
Are you an Ontario boy?
I'm from Windsor, Ontario.
All right. Yeah.
So I'm doing a tour of the nice blue collar cities of the province of Ontario. So those are my favorite ones anyway. They're the ones where you have the most fun. my actual training is in biomechanics as it pertains to the workplace. Ergonomics and occupational biomechanics. And back in 2014, I had a background in athletic therapy in my undergrad, but I really kind of got out of that when I went into grad school and really started focusing on ergonomics. But my PhD thesis was on understanding how muscles get fatigued. So if you do a bunch of work, how do those efforts cause your different muscles to lose their ability to generate forces? And right around that time, 2014, 2015, when I was finishing my PhD, was when Major League Baseball decided that they were going to put in a pitch clock, or at least talk about it.
Yes.
And it's just like if you were going to the gym and you did a set of exercises and you waited 30 seconds and then you did another set of exercises. If you shorten that break time, you're not going to do as many reps the next set, right?
Right.
So I applied my muscle fatigue model to the idea that a pitch clock is going to cause pitchers to become more fatigued, which we know fatigue in pitchers is probably one of the biggest things that can cause them to get hurt. And one of the biggest scientists in the field is Dr. Glenn Fleissig at the American Sport Medicine Institute. And he put out a paper that said pitching while fatigued is the biggest risk factor to have Tommy John surgery And it's like six times higher than any other risk factor.
Incredible. What is the reasoning behind that?
When you get fatigued, you know, people often look at it as, oh, if you're a pitcher and you're becoming fatigued, your ball velocity goes down, which obviously has competitive implications. But if you were to actually look at what's happening before that velocity goes down, pitchers start using, for lack of a, you know, scientific, they start pitching with their arm more. Right. So instead of that whole idea of, you know, drive from your legs and use your body to generate that velocity, they start getting more of that velocity from their arm. And that can lead to more stress on the elbow. And as a result, that's when you start seeing those injuries.
So they're almost using different areas that aren't as fatigued to make up for.
Yeah, exactly. So what ends up happening is that they go, okay, if I lose velocity, I'm going to get taken 500 feet and that's going to impact my career and that's going to do all these bad things. So what they do is they say, okay, well, I'm going to turn off all those regulators and all those protective things that I have and say, I'm going to keep my velocity up, but they're going to change their mechanics. So going back to that whole pitch clock idea, you know, I put together that paper and that got that went all over the place. So that was in newspapers and radio, and the MLBPA actually used it and included it as like an appendix in the last CBA. So that's kind of how I got into the baseball world, and kind of slowly since then have been saying, well, you know, we understand that workload is a big part of how pitchers get hurt, but the hardest part to capture there is their mechanics. Because usually it's the eye test that a coach has and says, oh, you know, you need to do this, you're not extending enough, whatever it is. But humans are really bad at discerning joint angles.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So we started playing around with some markerless motion capture technology, which is basically just using your cell phone to determine joint angles. And that was about a year ago. A year ago in March was our official company coming together, and we've been working at it since to just try and get more and more accurate.
Now, obviously, a lot of science goes into this, but I'm very curious just from the biology standpoint, are humans even supposed to be able to throw 90 miles to 100 miles an hour, 80 to 100 times in a go?
Well, I think that's, you know, sometimes people say, you know, what's the best way to pitch to never get hurt? And it's
you're like,
just
don't
do it. you know, and there's definitely things you can do to help minimize your risk of injury. But, you know, when you get to the major league level and you are pushing the limits of human performance, sometimes those limits push back because they don't like being pushed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's inherently a bit of a dangerous and a high force activity. And, you know, it's a matter of finding that sweet spot between, you know, totally getting hurt versus achieving maximum performance. And, you know, that's why I think there's such a huge focus on sports science now in baseball.
Well, pitching really is an interesting thing. I know we just talked to Nate Pearson's postseason pitching coach, Anthony Telford. This was a couple weeks back, and he pitched with the Montreal Expos for 5 years. He played professional ball for 15, and he just summed it up. He's like, if you're a pitcher, there's lots of things you can do to avoid injury, but you're going to get injured. He was just like, it is just a foregone conclusion. There is no way around it. You're going to wind up tearing your shoulder or your elbow or something along the way, which is really an interesting thing about pitching, because it's one of the few things in sports where it's just like a foregone conclusion that injuries are going to happen.
Well, it's kind of like when you talk to like NFL running backs, you know, they say, when's the last time you were ever healthy? And they say, before I took my first snap. So I think, yeah, you know, one of the things they always say about pitching too, is that if you ever want to find out if a pitcher has an injury, give them an MRI, because there's going to be some sort of damage in some way. You know, you do see a lot of pitchers who have long careers and manage to avoid injury, but it does seem like everybody runs into something sometime. I mean, you know, Justin Verlander was the poster boy for, you know, longevity and tolerance of workload and, you know, throwing 100 miles into his mid to late 30s, and, you know, his elbow went on him this year. So there's a lot you have to do to protect against it, but it is inherently a fairly dangerous activity.
All right, let's get into Pro Play AI. If we can start with what is it and what are you trying to accomplish with it?
Yeah, so Pro Play AI is our kind of parent company, and our goal is to provide biomechanics data for people doing a wide range of activities. And our first product is Pitch AI, which is a pitching biomechanics lab on your cell phone. And when you typically get a biomechanics assessment, it's a cell phone app. With a web portal and that too. So you can get your data and wherever you are. But somebody like Nate in the past, when he's gone to get a biomechanics assessment, it's you go to a lab, you typically wear spandex shorts, and that's it, with your running shoes, and you get these like little reflective markers put all over your body, and it's not very natural. It's very accurate, but it's not very natural.
Right.
And as a result, it's also pretty expensive. And you need quite a bit of technology and quite a bit of background to do it. And what we're trying to accomplish with Pitch AI is to just make biomechanics data that much easier to get, and you know, get it during games, get it during bullpens, get it from the moment you're, you know, 12 years old all the way up to the point you get drafted.
Right, because not every ball player has access to labs and scientists like Nate.
Exactly. Yeah, and exactly. And that's, you know, Nate's got that now, but at one point in time, you know, Nate was, you know, a teenager growing into his body, and not necessarily sure because he wasn't 101 mile an hour throwing Nate at that time. So, you know, there's a lot of insights you can glean from that type of an analysis, and making it on your phone makes it a lot easier for the athlete.
I can imagine. Now, I know you're one of a few of the founders for Pro Play AI. Nate Pearson also in that list. It's interesting because if you look at the list of founders, you all came from a wide array of professional backgrounds. What was it that kind of brought you all together? How did this whole thing get off the ground?
Yeah, so myself, like with the scientific background in biomechanics and in sports science and in ergonomics, I've been kind of always trying to find cheap technologies to do complicated things. And, you know, before this call, I was on another call where I was telling somebody that at one point in time, I made myself really nauseous because I made a virtual reality setup with a Kinect camera and a Google Cardboard. So I immersed myself in there, and you get pretty dizzy pretty fast. So I've always been trying to make, you know, cheap technology do complicated things. And our CEO, Reid Hanoon, he came at it from a totally different background, like totally self-made guy, you know, started his first business when he was 16, and he's been experimenting with technology from a bunch of different areas. And he's also got three sons, all of which are very competitive baseball players, including one that, you know, went to Division I in Texas. So Reid and I had been working together on a couple of projects in the ergonomic space. And then when we first started working on Pitch AI, we were saying, you know, we'd like to get somebody to give us the player's perspective, you know, somebody who's young and up and coming and hungry for data and, you know, really focused on making themselves better. And we met Casey Mulholland, who's the lead developer and head of Kinetic Pro Performance in Tampa. And we met him at the winter meetings last year. And, you know, we're showing him a little bit about what Pitch AI does. And I told him, who's somebody that you think might be good to work with? And he said first person was Nate that came to mind. So we got introduced through Nate, and you know, Nate's been giving us a ton of great feedback, and he's been working really hard to help us put together a product that's going to help players.
That's amazing. And that is one thing about Nate Pearson that the baseball world is very aware of, is he is incredibly analytically driven. I mean, most pitchers in the past anyways, it was go out and pitch, go out and throw. Yeah. But I'm curious about his development or his involvement here. Did ProPlay AI approach him? I know you just kind of mentioned that he was kind of who was recommended. Was he all in when you did approach him about this?
Yeah. So, you know, we kind of approached him at first saying, you know, do you want to be like a spokesperson / endorsement type thing? And the one thing with Nate is that if you give him information, you better be ready to answer questions about it for the next half an hour, because he's just, he's so hungry to learn about these things. And, you know, after about 15 minutes of, you know, going through what we were trying to do in that, it became very apparent that, you know, he can have so much of a bigger role than being a spokesperson. So, you know, when we were starting the company back then, I don't think we had ProPlay AI as a company. And we were talking about where we wanted to go, and no, it just made total sense to bring Nate on in a much bigger capacity. And he's been fantastic. And shout out to Nate, because I think today he was officially announced as the number one pitching prospect in baseball. So
yes, he was. You know,
good for Nate. Yeah.
I'm curious then, after you've attached all the little nanodes or whatever it is to him, and he's finished pitching in his boxers or whatever he's doing there, what did you find about his pitching? And have other players gotten on board with this? Like, is this something that is growing? Are you noticing that?
Yeah, biomechanics is probably one of the fastest growing technologies in baseball, and one of the most sought after skill sets in sports scientists right now. And kind of there's a few things driving that. One of them is the, you know, popularity of like driveline baseball. Driveline's based out of Washington, and they've got a habit of turning, you know, also rans into elite prospects, and then guys at the end of their careers, you know, giving them a few extra years because they boost their velocity. And a big part of what they do is capturing biomechanics in their lab. And, you know, they've probably got one of the biggest databases of high-end throwers, including Nate, you know, from their facility. So baseball is a copycat game. And, you know, driveline is their models being emulated by pro teams everywhere. And a lot of these teams are hiring biomechanists and building labs. But one of the more interesting things is with markerless technology, where you don't necessarily need a lab, and you've got companies like Kinetrox and Simi who are providing in-game biomechanics, people are having a hard time, you know, figuring out what to do with the data. And then in the last year with Hawkeye coming into the stadiums, they're actually doing like markerless capture of every player on the field. So teams are going, okay, well, now we have these data. We have no idea what to do with them. So now they want all these biomechanists coming in. And I think that's really what's making it exciting for our field.
So let's break it down for the listener and the layman like myself. Obviously, Tommy John surgery has become, the truth is, an epidemic in baseball. Yep. And it doesn't matter where you go, it's everywhere. It's prevalent in Japan, it's prevalent in Korea, it's prevalent in the majors, in the minor leagues. You're seeing younger and younger players wind up with Tommy John surgery. I mean, let's face it is ridiculous to see a 14-year-old get Tommy John. I know you mentioned the pitch clock and just rest in general. What are some of the things you're finding from capturing these biomechanic data that you can use, and what should pitchers be trying to do to avoid getting injured?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it is being truthful and listening to your body. One of the things that we try and make it really easy to do is to compare yourself against, you know, somebody goes out and pitches when they feel great. And this is a good example of like Nate in this past year. We had a bunch of his data from the start of the season, you know, before spring training. And then we had data as he like went off to spring training and started the season. And then when he got hurt and he was rehabbing, we were actually taking video and comparing himself against what he was at the start of the season to make sure that his mechanics were the same as when he started the year. So that's one big thing, and one big application. I think what we're learning the most about injury in pitchers is that you really do need to take into account like three things. Your workload is huge. And with a lot of these guys who are 13, 14 and they're getting hurt, what they're doing is, you know, playing on three travel ball teams and they're doing showcases and they're trying to get that scholarship. Right. They just get overworked, right? So getting overworked. And then, you know, there's a huge competitive advantage to throwing hard without a doubt. Yes. Velocity, like if you look at command and you look at all these different factors, like it always
velocity's comes out king. That absolutely.
Velocity's king. Yeah, exactly. You know, 99 down the middle, you know, yeah, sure, it can get hit. But guess what? 90 down the middle is going to get hit way harder. Right?
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that we're seeing, and part of the reason why we're seeing like so many like four inning starters, is that pitchers are pitching a lot closer to their maximum velocity on every pitch now. You know, you're not seeing a guy going out there with 85% effort because he knows he has to throw a complete game. He's going 98, 99% effort. And then as a result, you know, to try and get maximum velocity, they're also at the maximum limit of their mechanics. So, you know, we're finding, and our research has found, is that changes in mechanics are probably the biggest thing when it comes to understanding when you might be becoming injured or becoming fatigued. So monitoring that over time is absolutely huge.
So consistency on your delivery is huge.
Yeah, consistency is very big. Yeah, consistency is very big.
And the third thing, what was, did we already?
So it's the workload. So, you know, how many innings, yeah, how many pitches you're throwing, the how close you are to your maximum velocity, and then understanding how your mechanics change over time. Yeah.
Now, one thing the baseball community does is resist change.
Yes.
I mean, there are a million examples of this, from the shift to analytics to bullpen usage. We could go on and on and on. Have you found resistance from the baseball purists, from the old school, to open their mind to the fact biometrics is worth researching?
Well, the way that we've kind of approached things is that we're not trying to tell anybody to do anything differently. We're just a tool for capturing data, right? So what we've found is that, you know, whether you're old school or new school, you have your thoughts on mechanics, and typically you just haven't been able to capture them. So when somebody can't capture those data, they start making up their own, you know, hypotheses, and we're just trying to provide them with a tool that's going to allow them to, you know, more accurately say what it is. I'm sure there's been resistance. You know, a lot of our marketing has been through social media and, you know, doing podcasts and talking to teams, but a lot of it's been teams and that approaching us. So I'm sure there's resistance out there, but it seems like the interest is way higher than the resistance. And I think a lot of those coaches or teams that are resistant to data, I don't know, they probably aren't our clients, and they're probably not competitors of the people who are interested, because that's the way the game's going.
Yeah, I mean, baseball is constantly looking for new advantages. It only makes sense to take this seriously. Who are some of the teams and some of the players you're working with?
So I mean, like, I think we've got close to 100 different colleges signed up in the States.
Incredible.
Now, yeah, so really exciting there, because you know, it's great to work with that level. You know, very serious. A lot of these teams have analytics staff, and you know, working closely with those analytics staff is really something that's exciting to me, because I think what we found in the baseball community is when the pitch FX data got originally released, you know, analysts were able to come up with so many more things because the data were publicly available. And, you know, that's the direction we want to go, is make some of this biomechanics data publicly available. So the colleges are the one. And then two of our like really close partners are Driveline Baseball in Washington, and then Prep Baseball Report. And Prep Baseball Report's a scouting service. They do showcases, they do events, but they work with a lot of different age levels, and they help try and find players' homes at colleges and, you know, get them drafted and get them that visibility. Working with them has allowed us to get really the data into younger players' hands. And that's really what's exciting. And, you know, also with like Casey Mulholland at Kinetic Pro, he's really been focusing hard on how do we educate people on biomechanics data, because it is confusing.
Yeah,
it can be complicated. And it works best with, you know, a variety of different data sources other than just standing alone. And, you know, those are the really exciting things that we've got on the go. But, you know, any level, we've captured 10-year-olds, we've captured, you know, my parents throwing snowballs. It's been a lot of fun to work with everyone.
Is youth baseball one of your major focuses? Obviously, if you can get in with the kids and kind of teach them the right way to be doing things, that goes a long way.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Nate is the one that kind of came up with this story. Is, you know, he was a big tall kid in his teenage years, but he, you know, he wasn't throwing very hard, and he had a hard time kind of growing into his own mechanics. And that kind of story really has motivated me to try and say, let's get working with the younger age groups. And we do have some coaches that are working with younger age groups. And I think what they're finding is it's really good as like a coaching tool. You go, okay, hey, this is what you did last time, and you know you didn't do very well. Try and do this. And it just gives them that, you know, that extra point of data, and they play with the skeletons in our app and they can move them around, and they get really excited about it.
Now, obviously, injuries happen in all facets of the game. Not just pitching, although I know pitch AI is kind of your focus. Are you working on biomechanics to help ball players across the board? Is there an app or something that's being used to help an outfielder or an infielder or whatever it may be?
Yeah. So pitch AI, you know, whether it started with the pitchers, but, you know, the Blue Jays and have been working closely with us, and they were using it for a lot of their position players at the alternate site, you know, to give them some feedback on how they're throwing, you know, whether they're doing long toss or working on infield drills. So any type of throwing can be analyzed in it. And we're in the process now of doing like hit AI, which will be, you know, looking at the swing and your kinematic right. sequence and,
yeah,
you know, how well people use their lower half to hit the ball too.
That's really interesting. I'm really curious. Did you play baseball at all, Mike?
I played. Yeah. I was a pitcher, you know, up until high school, and then, you know, didn't really have the stuff. So switched over to, you know, the rec league softball. Yeah. So I'm still playing some of that now, but yeah, no, baseball's, we always joke that we're not the best Canadians in my family, 'cause we don't really care about hockey that much, but we're diehard baseball and football fans.
Diehard baseball and football fans. And you can't get enough of those blue collar cities.
Exactly.
Do you have any other big league names besides Nate that are using pitch AI currently?
Well, we've got lots of guys. Nate's our public facing guy.
Right, of course.
The rest of them, you know, just because they sign up or whatever it might be. But I can tell you, we've got a database that we compare everyone against, and it's got about 500 Division I and professional arms in it. So, the other thing that's really exciting is when right before the world shut down,
yeah.
I took my camera down to Phoenix, and a friend of mine and I just went stadium to stadium, you know, grabbed a ticket, got as close as we could, filmed a bunch. And, you know, we were able to get a lot of really good data on guys like Corey Kluber and, you know, Jesse Hahn. And, there are quite a few guys that we captured, you know, just from the crowd. And that's one of the benefits of this technology, is you don't need markers, and you really just need a camera, and you can capture biomechanics.
That sounds like I could be a scientist. That sounds like a ton of fun.
Yeah, exactly. Anytime you can do science with a beer and a hot dog nearby, you're in the right line of work.
Mark me in. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know you mentioned something that really kind of piqued my interest here when you were talking about Nate Pearson and how he didn't used to throw with the velocity that he did. I'm very curious then, biomechanics, you must be able to tweak the way guys are throwing so that they can max out those velos.
Absolutely. And I think that's why educating coaches on their biomechanics data and their players' biomechanics data is so important, is because they can identify inefficiencies. You know, and with Nate, with having like a rapid growth spurt, you know, coordination was a bit of an issue. And he worked with some great coaches down in Florida and in Tampa, and, you know, went to junior college where they really prioritized his development. And all of his coaches along the way have been really good at identifying his mechanics. So I think we can get to the answer a little bit quicker when we have these data, as opposed to, you know, in the past where it was a bit of a guessing game to see what worked.
A trial and error thing, and you can actually pinpoint what's going on, eh?
Exactly. And that's one of the ways we always talk about using our technology, is say you're trying to get somebody to do a drill to work on a certain cue. You know, you want to brace your lead leg better or whatever it might be. This is something where if you do the drill, you can film the person, do the drill, film them again, and say, did that actually work? And if it didn't work, maybe you need to try something different.
If you had to pick one thing that you've learned from biomechanics and how to prevent an injury for pitchers, what would that one piece of advice be?
One piece of advice on what I've learned from this biomechanics, you know, it kind of sounds like it's not a cop out, but like, it's unbelievable how many of these old anecdotes that coaches used to come up with, how many of them end up being true when you get enough data? So I think the exciting part of these technologies is, and this goes for your ball flight stuff, like your Rapsodos and all that, it's a lot of these old adages about different movements or different ways to throw a baseball, they end up being true in the end. And it's really important to listen to those old school guys to help learn.
Well, I know you even touched on it when we very first started this interview, when you said, it's funny, a lot of times you should just trust your body.
Yep. Yep. And there's a lot of research in that, especially anytime you're doing something close to your maximum effort, is that your body is going to know how to get itself in the right position to do something. But where the challenge is that if you have, you know, limited range of motions, or you're not healthy enough to get yourself into those positions, that's where the challenges are. And I think what you're seeing with a lot of teams and a lot of organizations is they put a big focus on move well and then perform well. Right. And, you know, that's why things like sleep are becoming such important things to track. And they're recommending that their minor leaguers are all, you know, big focus on nutrition, big focus on sleep.
There's dietitians on teams now. Absolutely.
Exactly. Because when you take care of all those things, a lot of times the biomechanics start taking care of themselves.
That's really interesting. Mike, this was great, man. Thank you so much. Like,
hopefully it was not too sciencey.
Well, no, this is an aspect of the game that is growing, and it is very interesting. And sometimes it's a little intimidating to delve into, you know, but you made this very layman terms for us. So we really appreciate your time, man. Thank you so, so much.
No problem. No problem. It's always fun to talk biomechanics.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Chose to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.